sunshine, a little over, liver, liver, lead us less too far, we wonder.
Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You're tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. Happy 2020. I'm your host, Jill Spears. Hello, Lance.
Hi, what do I say?
What do you say? Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, new year.
A new year, exciting 2020. And coming back at you live, so we're ready to take your calls this year, aren't we, Lance?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Like calls.
You love calls. And we're going to just go ahead and give the phone numbers right now, 970-527-4868, 866-KVNF now. You can email worm at kvnf.org. And we're actually going to kick off the season most of January talking about seeds and seed saving,
mm-hmm.
which is very exciting. We started, this will be our sixth year, our sixth January of talking about seed saving.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it seems like it gets momentum. And last year was a lot of good stuff going on with seed saving. So I'm expecting 2020 to be even more exciting.
Yeah, more people are getting more into it. And it's just that lost step.
Right, that lost step of what we really need to preserve our our biodiversity with our food supply, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's up to 80 or 90% of the seeds from our food crops have been lost to modern agriculture.
Wow.
And
then what time span do you think that is? In just
50 years.
50 years. Yeah, now that really puts it in perspective.
Yeah, 50 years, 60 years, something like that. It started probably right after World War II, and that's when all the hybrids, super hybrids, started to show up, especially in corn and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And the old varieties and regional varieties did not work well for industrial agriculture. Like you have the russet potato, and the reason why it did so well, it has a thick skin and you can beat it up, machine harvesting and stuff.
Right.
It's not really, for me, it's not that good of it flavored.
Okay, exactly. And so it was trying to get a product that was going to withstand modern agriculture and harvesting.
Yeah, same with grains. Your grains were ripened out in the field at different stages. And so you really had to wait a long time to get the whole field evenly dried out.
Right, back in the day.
And back in the day with those old ancient grains is what they're calling them now.
Right.
And so they started hybriding them so that they would all be the same height and stuff, because they weren't. They were all over the place.
Again, sort of our modern day life of whatever's convenient
type of
thing.
Turkey red wheat, which is an old heirloom, probably 1,000 or more years old, and it would grow on a good water year. It's dryland farmed, and you didn't have to irrigate it. And if there was a water year, it'd get 6 feet tall.
Wow.
If it's not a water year, it would get down to, 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it gets 6 feet tall, it's really hard for the combines to harvest it. And so that's when they started hybriding things to make it easy for the machines.
Right, exactly. So we've lost a lot of our...
Mm-hmm. There's a list, and maybe I'll find it the next show or two.
It's amazing, yeah.
It's amazing. They just took, like, tomatoes, like 300 varieties gone.
Wow.
Carrots, 400 varieties. Onions, 200 varieties. It's pretty phenomenal what's gone.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
And in that short time span.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, so important to seed save, and I'm excited to be talking about this.
Yeah, and we hadn't chatted about this before, but they talk about seed banks. And every farming community, needs to be the seed bank.
Right.
You can't have that big one up in Iceland. That's nice. It's nice that they're doing that, but it's not really going to help.
Not practical as far as usage and restoring. Yeah.
And I remember watching that seed show, and like they had a big seed bank in the Philippines, had tremendous floods and lost the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Lost the whole thing. Gone.
Right. You can't have all your eggs in one basket there.
Yeah. So, we all need to be doing it. Every gardener needs to do it. And we can share what we have.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's some of the stuff we're going to be talking about. Sarah Pope Smith is going to be in here on the 24th, and we're going to be talking about the...
Actually, it's the 21st.
Oh, the 21st.
Sorry.
Thank you.
This is 7th, the 14th, and then the
21st. Okay, perfect. The 21st, Tuesday the 21st. And we're going to be talking about what's going on in the Delta County Library System for the Seed Library. And I'm just going to let you know right now that there is some seed sorting parties that are going to happen at the Cedar Edge Library on Thursday, January 23rd from 4 to 6 p.m. and at the Hotchkiss Library on Wednesday, January 29th from 4 to 6 p.m. So that's going to be some fun stuff. You've been to those parties before. And
it's fun. People get together and you're I don't know. The one I went to, you took a bag of seeds and you put it in the envelopes.
Right, and sorted them out. Mm-hmm. And I think you go home with some seed and get to meet your neighbors and have some fun. So Sarah will be telling us all about that on the 21st here.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I got my Delta County Library card, went online, and you can actually scroll through the seed library online.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Different kinds of kale and whatever you're looking for. Pretty interesting. Okay, 970-527-4868, 1-866 KVNF now. You know, I guess seed saving is a pretty ancient practice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how we got all the biodiversity in the first place. And it's really what you're saying is just encourage people as part of their garden to have a spot there where you're planting now. We might as well think about planting something for seed, right?
Yeah, you can just start doing that. And even if it's just one plant, it will get you into the rhythm of it. And like lettuce would be an easy one.
That's
and
an easy one.
And it's self-pollinating. And what do I want to say? It will produce seed. It's one of this is on seed growing for lettuce. They actually like being on the dry side. They'll produce more seed. Grow them normally, as you do lettuce, and once it puts its seed spike out and starts to flower, that's when you come back on the watering.
Okay.
And if you happen to water it and it's got this big seed stock, it gets so heavy it falls over and cracks off. So it wants
to keep it dry.
Keep it dry. I've done that, so.
All right. Yeah, and that's the thing, is just try something, like you say, so you get in the swing of it. And you get used to what you want to do. And, oh, good. We've got Eric in Norwood on the line. Good evening, Eric.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hello. What's
Happy
going
New
on?
Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I called a while back about the garlic bulbils.
Oh, yes, yes.
And so I put them in. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
Which, that's not actually even a seed, though, correct? From what I've been reading and researching, the bulbil from the flower
is
actually another little tiny
there's technical
bulb
terms.
Of garlic.
Yes, it's there's different terms. I still call it a seed.
You do.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But
okay.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, I'm on that route and see what happens.
Oh, good.
Good luck.
And then in the same year last year, my onions all bolted and went to seed. And I pulled a lot of them to try and save them, and I let several of them just do what they wanted to do, and I came up with several huge flowers, 5 feet tall.
Wow!
Just amazing, just begging me to try and save them. So I did. And now I'm not quite sure how to approach planting the little black seeds that I'm assuming that's what the little black things are.
Yeah, they're seeds. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
right.
Seeds. And I'm just thinking about I plant all of my stuff from seed and stuff, and I plant onions in early to mid-April.
You're putting those black seeds in the ground?
In the ground.
You're not starting them.
No, no, that's just what I'm doing. Lots of people like to start them because they'll get a bigger onion at the other end because there's a longer season. So you can do it either way. And
okay.
I would, if you're going to to start them in flats or whatever. I would do it 2 to 3 weeks or mid-March.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if there's anybody out there that's growing them, I have friends that grow them, and I don't know exactly when they plant them in their flats.
Right.
There is a gal out here doing it. I've seen them in her. She starts even earlier, I think, but whatever.
Yeah. The trick is that they can damp off really easy. Do you know what that means?
I've heard the term. I forget what it means.
Damp off.
In other words, you water them too much, and they'll rot right at the base of the plant and die. So you have to, again, that's one. At a different time, you don't want to water too much. You want to keep them moist, but not too much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and are you talking about when you put them right directly in the ground or?
From seed. At any part time, if you do seed in the flats or seed in the garden, you have to be careful about overwatering them.
Got it. Good. Okay. Thank you. All right. I might try both, actually. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious. This is my thing. You said most of your onions bolted.
I planted red and whites, and all the whites bolted.
Okay, you planted those little bulbs?
I planted, they look like scallions.
You planted the green?
Yeah.
Okay, the green.
A bulb that had, they have greens on them.
Yeah. Because those little bulbs, this is their second year, and onions are biennials.
Trying to figure out how. I
suggest not growing the bulbs that you can buy in the stores.
Right.
Except for green onions, for scallions, you buy that plant, which is what you bought. I'm just surprised. I was curious on why maybe that was just that white variety that did that.
It's the first time it's happened in 5 or 6 years.
Wow. Okay.
We had the big frost on the first day of summer.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading that it could be the change of temperature, and they get freaked out and they try and survive.
Okay.
I mean, they survived through that, but they had 3 inches of snow on them 2 weeks before that, and then it frosted.
Yeah.
Killing frost on June 21st here.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But they lived through it.
Yeah.
And they thrived. And then all of a sudden
they just went.
They started bolting. So learning experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still have them. We're cutting them up. They have a middle that we kind of cut out of it.
Yeah.
It's tasty.
The red ones are actually lasting longer.
Wow. Okay.
So the seed, I can directly plant it. And.
Yeah.
I can also start it a little earlier and plant it as a set.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. I'll try them both.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let us know what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Appreciate the show.
Sure.
Thanks, Eric. Good luck.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Eric from Norwood. It's pretty high and can be sometimes cold down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our first caller of the new year. Yeah. All right. So garlic. Boobles.
Yeah.
Love that word. and another seed crop, so to speak, that you want to not get too wet. I mean.
Garlic?
No, onions.
Onions.
Onions. Yeah. Yeah. All right. 970-527-4868, 1-866, KBNF now. One of the things that we love about seed saving, we talk about a lot, is how things adapt to the climate and the region where you are.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, as you grow things out, they will adapt to your region, your conditions in your garden specifically, but also to the region, the day lengths, soil, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Even water, where water is different.
pH balance of the water.
Yeah, and I'm watering with well water, so mine are more adapted to that than irrigation water. And then you have irrigation from, you know, all the different irrigation companies and canals.
Right.
You know.
That specific it can be.
It can be, yeah. Especially if the canals are open and some parts they're running through cement culverts, shall we say, and then sometimes they're running through mancus shale. Mancus shell really, they pick up a lot of minerals from the mancus shell.
Sure.
You know, so anyways, but every year they get better, or more adapted. The flavor comes out in them, and the Native Americans, Bill McDorman, the guy that has Rocky Mountain Sea Alliance, was
right.
talking to the natives of the Desert Southwest, and he says, and they were telling him the seeds always remember.
Right, I do remember that, Bill McDorman.
But anyways, so they will, you know, those 80% lost that we say, the
right.
plants will keep
will
on.
Will remember and come back to.
You know, in those different regions,
they, right.
if you kept on growing them out, they will
right.
remember how to get there.
Gotcha. And so what have you seen in your garden? Because you've been seed saving for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, the main thing, the onions do really well now. And
they've adapted to
yeah.
your climate, your microclimate,
yeah.
your garden.
And I have specific the New York Earlies and the Southport Red Globes. They don't quite store quite as long. So those I eat first.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, but then I have red man onion and yellow Spanish. They store a little bit longer. And then I have another one that is called Newberg. And that, the past 2 years that I've stored it, it has lasted clear into July.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like stuff. That way your garden rolls like that.
Yeah.
You've really fine-tuned that
and then,
nicely.
And then the carrots, I have 7 varieties, and 5 of them are starting to look the same. And I think it's just soil conditions. So
really?
I really think it is because, you know, you'll still have your typical red core Chardonnay or your Danvers, but more and more, and I have Italian giant reds and a French Theocene, and those 4 or 5. All are starting to look the same.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Now the Scarlet Nantes, they're starting to get a little bit bigger,
uh-huh.
you know, but they're supposed to be long and skinny, and they're really not. And it's supposed to be a blunt end,
uh-huh.
and it's a pointed end.
Oh, really?
And the Rumbas is about a 6-inch carrot.
How long you've been growing those varieties together?
Let's see. Well, probably over 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And every year That's I grow neat. Out a different variety.
Right.
You know, because they will cross-pollinate. They'll cross-pollinate with other carrots, and they'll cross-pollinate with wild carrot, which is also known as Queen Anne's lace.
Interesting. So every year it's a different variety, and yet
mm-hmm.
they're still taking on.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting. Is
exactly.
That
it's
looking,
fascinating.
You know.
Okay, great. Hey, it's Frank in Hotchkiss on the line. Good evening, Frank.
Hey, Happy New Year, you guys.
Happy
Hi,
New
how
Year.
Are you?
How are you?
Great. Say a couple of things. First, just a tip on onions. Direct seeding those like in February or so into deep flats so that they have a lot of soil under them.
Uh-huh.
Really helps. And then if you put them out, if they're bigger than a pencil at the base, when you put them out and then they take a freeze, they're sure to bolt, even if they're
okay.
long day.
Good to know.
Okay.
Yeah.
There
so
it is.
Don't let them get too big before you put them out. They're susceptible to that. But the main reason I wanted to call was it's so fantastic that this valley has all this expertise in seed saving. And, you know, Lance is right at the top of the list. It's just amazing what he does and how much he knows about it. And then there's, you know, just gobs of people up around here that are
mm-hmm.
doing this fabulous work. And just wanted to take my hat off and thank you for all that resource that you offer us all.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Frank, because we know you're a big part of the research center down there, and you guys did a lot of your seed-to-seed program classes
yeah.
down there.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, I didn't do anything, but everybody else did lots. So we'll hope to do more in the future.
Okay. Well,
all
well.
Right. Well,
Thanks
thank you
lot,
so
guys.
Much.
Hey, wait, 1 second.
Yeah.
Frank, I just what did you spray on the peaches in the fall so they as a preventative for spring or summer, some disease or something?
Well, generally, Carinium blight or shot hole is a problem in peaches.
Uh huh.
And it can affect not only the leaves but also the fruit. And so copper applications are usually used in the fall.
Okay. And is there still leaves on, or do you do it when the leaves are off?
You do that as the leaves are falling.
Oh, okay. So it's a copper.
You're putting that copper on that on that abscission layer where the leaf separates from the tree.
Okay.
And that's an entry point for the fungus, and there's a
I remember it was something.
Copper.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, something we don't want to put too much out there because copper can accumulate in the soil, but we do it a couple times on peaches in the spring and the fall in organic peach orchards, and it works pretty darn well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you so much for your call, Frank. And
see you guys.
See ya. Yeah, I just want to echo that. I'm so excited about this whole seed-saving thing. And we have people like Frank and you, Lance. You've been doing it for so long. And your garden is, you grow all your food. I mean, what is it that you don't grow as far as what you eat? I mean, it's pretty amazing.
What do I not grow? all my grains, all my beans, all my fruits and vegetables. So I'll say this, cookies.
Cookies, I was going to say.
And I could make those with all those grains.
Yes, you could.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's great. And last year, Don LaRoe over at Zephro's farm, you guys put on and worked with the Seed to Seed program, and you were up at the research station up in Rogers Mesa a lot. And that was how many months? Was that a nine-month program?
Nine-month program.
And really well received. And so I think people are just understanding the importance of what's going on. We also had some special guests. We had Bill McDorman from the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance on our show last year, and that was really exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, he's
quite enthusiastic.
Quite enthusiastic. And if you want to go to RockyMountainSeeds.org, boy, there's a wealth of information there. And there's also an event coming up Sunday, May 3rd through Friday, May 8th in Buell, Idaho. And it's all about seed and grain experience.
Yes.
So and you can check that out.
Yeah, you can check that out. And they're using the grains for most of the meals.
Oh,
and
nice.
There's also the in the little flyer, there's hot springs on that property.
Oh, nice.
So there's private hot springs that people will be able to go.
Well, there you go. You just tempted some people to look that up, Lance. That sounds great. But, yeah, he was so enthusiastic. And same with you, Lance, and Don last year. It just got us going. So good. And Sarah will be here the 21st and talking about the library and seed exchanges. And you can connect with a lot of those as part of the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance. Okay. 970-527-4868, 1-866 KBNF now. We're going to be talking about different plants and different techniques. Right now, you're still cleaning.
Yes, I'm still cleaning.
Tell us about what you're doing.
Well, this is rather absurd in our modern busy lifestyle, but that's not me.
That's true.
But anyways, I have spent the entire winter taking the seed heads or grain heads of the spelt off the stalks one at a time.
One by one.
Mm-hmm. So now I have over seven 5-gallon buckets of those grain heads.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And then I put them on the floor, and I roll my feet over them, my shoes. You got to use flat shoes. The problem with spelt is it has a hole on it, and traditional threshing will not get that hole off. And so I'm rolling this grain underneath my foot.
There's special technique.
Yes. You develop it, and so you got to roll it. And then I will winnow it with a bigger screen, and it will get most of the grain out. And actually, the stuff on top is the stuff that didn't get hold. So I put that in a separate bucket because I'm going to redo it. And then I winnow it with a smaller screen to get the small stuff out. And what's left is I will winnow.
Wow.
And it's really light, and after one or two pourings, I'll have clean grain.
So your seven buckets goes down to how much?
I will have a 5.5 or 7 gallons of clean grain.
Oh,
at the
my.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds worth it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's me, and this is, you know, it's.
You know, that's what's nice about your vegetables all the time, Lance, is everything's always clean and beautiful. It's like Alice in Wonderland's garden up there.
Yeah, and I realize I'm doing this with a spelt. Well, I have about, not quite the same amount of acorn I grew over 2 years ago. Uh-huh. It's got that hole on it, too.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
So same technique.
And then I grew some emmer, and emmer has that hole on it. Emmer is an ancient wheat from the Middle East.
Right.
Acorn from the Middle East, maybe up into Eastern Europe,
mm-hmm.
but it has a hole in it. And it's acorn looks like long-grain brown rice.
Okay.
Is what it looks
interesting.
Like. Yeah.
So maybe these are some of the problems that, you know, caused modern techniques to be mm-hmm. developed
yeah.
and lose these varieties
lose
of seed.
Lose these varieties. And you have to realize that these were peasant culture grains.
Sure.
And they didn't have all the distractions that we have now.
Right.
So this is what they did in the evening is they cleaned their grain.
Yeah.
They
and
cleaned.
You have that system of going about it a little bit at a time. So
yeah,
it's just
it doesn't,
nice.
Yeah.
Not overwhelming.
No.
Hey, oh, it's good to hear from Cynthia tonight in Delta. Good evening, Cynthia.
Good evening. How are you?
Good. How good. Are you?
Doing great. My question is about wild asparagus. I know that along the irrigation canals and whatnot over here on the Western Slope that asparagus grows pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering about the collecting of the seeds. And
okay.
So after it's, you know, seeded, can you collect it?
Yes.
And then, yes.
Yes.
And so is it the little black bulbs that you collect? And then can you propagate it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You can propagate it. And it's those red berries that have the black seeds, and they're very sticky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're very, very sticky. And what I would do is the really big fat stalks that have it, those are the females. And generally, I'm just going to talk about asparagus just a little bit.
Yeah.
Asparagus is one of those plants where you want the male plants because they produce more spears. Whereas the female plant produces several really big, thick, 1-inch, 2-inch wide stalks. Those are the female stalks. And you need the males, obviously, because you need pollination. But anyways, so I would go to the ones that have the biggest, thickest stalks. They're going to be the healthiest. And are there still berries out there? I haven't looked around, you know.
Right.
Oh, not in a while.
Okay. But the birds really like them and stuff like that. And so if you want to go out there, you can still see if there's any berries out there and stuff. And yes, they'll come up. Easily.
Right. Okay. And so you get the male stalks and then...
You want the female plant, the big fat stalks.
To plant.
So you take the whole stalk and not just the seed?
No, you just take the seed. I'm just saying that big healthy plant is the one you want to get the seeds from.
Oh,
okay.
That's what I'm saying. You know,
great. And then just plant them somewhere nearby or can I...
Put them in plots and stuff, because if you just put them in the ground, the crowns are going to be right on top of the ground, and they're going to, sprout really early in spring and then get frozen off.
Right.
So you're going to want to plant them in, start them in seed flats, and then you're going to transplant them into 4-inch plants, because you're going to want to get crowns, these crowns that you can, they're called root crowns. And and then the minimum you're going to plant them in the garden is 12 inches deep, those crowns. And my new bed was 18 inches deep. That's traditional. You can look it up at how deep you're supposed to do it. And the reason why they planted those crowns so deep, there's two reasons. One is so they don't come up so early. And the other one is in the big commercial fields to control weeds, they'd run over the whole field with a disc. And the crowns are 18 inches deep, you're not going to hit them.
Right.
And those are the two reasons why you do that.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Good luck, Cynthia.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I've been thinking about asparagus along the side of the road lately, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We had a caller last summer that wanted to plant it on the irrigation canal.
That's right.
And we suggested plant it on the uphill side. because the downhill side of the canal, that's where they drive and dump all the dirt when they clean it out and stuff.
Right. I believe that was your suggestion.
Yeah.
You're always thinking about those kind of things, making things a little bit easier.
Easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks to our callers tonight. That was great to hear from everybody. Mm-hmm. And we'll be continuing our seed saving.
Oh, can we do just do say one last
of
little
course.
Thing?
Of course.
I got this little thing, earwigs.
Oh, yes. You met someone on a trail or something.
Yes, I was out
question.
Skiing on Grand Mesa and started chatting with these people, and they recognized my voice. And they wanted to know about earwigs and how to control them. So I wasn't in the garden.
The earwig mode.
up on Grand Mesa. So anyways, I thought about it. And there's the first thing you can do is there's quite a lot of biological control. So you would look up parasitic nematodes or earwigs and what's their predators. And this would be probably the best way because these parasitic nematodes eat the eggs and the larvae in the ground.
Okay.
So they don't even get to get big. Okay.
Okay.
That's one thing. And then the next thing you can do is trap them. And
Really?
Yeah. You take corrugated cardboard and you cut it so that all the holes are there.
Uh-huh.
And you roll that up.
Uh-huh.
And tape it. And earwigs love those kind of places to hide.
I can see them going right for it.
Right for it. Or you can put like halves of citrus, like banana peels or grapefruit halves, stick them in the garden outside, and you pull it up in the morning and it's full of earwigs.
Oh, okay.
And you just put that in a bucket of water or whatever, and get rid of it.
Right.
And then the third thing is they were complaining that all their young plants are getting eaten. Diatomaceous earth.
Diatomaceous earth.
As a last resort to save your plants.
Right.
Just sprinkle. And every time you water, you're going to have to redo the diatomaceous earth.
Yeah, that's one of those supplies to just have on hand, isn't
it? Yeah, I buy a 50-pound bag.
Right.
It takes about 3 or 4 years to use it.
Mm-hmm. But always good to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can use it for a lot of different things. All right. Well, thanks for the earwig question and the earwig advice.
Yeah.
All right. And we'll be back next Tuesday at 6:30 to continue our discussion.
Yeah, so we'll get into the plants.
Get into plants and techniques and just spill your brain right on the radio, okay. Lance.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. See you next week. Okay. Thanks for listening to
Bye.
As the Worm Turns on KVNF.
You're about to make a sign to I got a gal that I love so. Low, little low, and low.